Happy New Year! The Ira Kaufman Podcast is on the sage of Tampa Bay sports. It's his podcast. He's Mr. Ira Kaufman. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks fan. Lee DeCamper of Joe Bucks fan is here. And the coach is gone, which we already know, Ira. The general manager is leading the search. Things are moving. Things are happening. Lots been going on. Ira, how are you? What have you been hearing? And what'd you think of Mr. Jason Light at the podium the other day? I know you love to say the podium. And, of course, your podcast is presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon.
Well, it would have been nice to have a glazer at the podium or at a table sitting with Jason Light, and I'll tell you why. After listening to Jason Light for 15 minutes on Monday, Buck fans have to be very puzzled about why Dirk Cutter doesn't have a job. I mean, Dirk Cutter was fantastic, says Light. Dirk Cutter did an unbelievable job. I got nothing bad to say about Dirk Cutter. He did everything we asked. He'd be a heck of a coach in this league. Why doesn't he have a job? I mean, that's where you need the owners who made the decision. It wasn't Jason Light's decision to fire Dirk Cutter. I'm not sure it was his decision to hire Dirk Cutter, but it certainly wasn't his decision to fire him. Despite a pointed question by Mr. Lee DeCamper to try to single out one or two of Cutter's shortcomings, you know, not a brutal question, and one that very much needed an answer, we got a lot of pablum. Not one specific area where Cutter fell a little short of what the Bucks were expecting. Not one area where they didn't have a lot of confidence in Dirk Cutter going forward in 2019 to address. Not one. Whether it was Mike Smith, Jameis Winston, clock management, can't win the close games, absolutely nothing. If you didn't know any better, DeCamper, you would have thought Cutter went 13-3. What's going on out there?
Well, I tell you what, if I wanted to be an ass, when I asked Jason, can you name one element on the field that you were not confident Dirk could turn around? He said, no. If I was an ass, I would have followed that up and said, well, why is he not employed?
I guess the only thing he said, Steve, was the wins weren't there. The wins weren't there. Well, that doesn't mean it was Cutter's fault necessarily that the wins weren't there. Light still got a job. So that tells me the Glazers thought it was a coaching problem.
Two words why Cutter's not here. It's real simple.
5-11? Nope.
No, those are numbers.
Those are numbers.
These are words.
All right, two words.
Mike Smith.
Well, Mike Smith's not around. So
yeah, it's kind of hard to completely turn around a defense in the middle of the season. But that's the main reason. I mean, the inconsistency in the offense, you know, Light and Dirk love to talk about, oh, this is one of the best offenses. It was so inconsistent. Now, this is Steve's pet peeve. When Light did a sidebar interview with Casey Phillips for Buccaneers.com, and he bragged it was one of the greatest offenses in the history of the NFL.
I don't know where he came up with that.
Well, I'll just say this. The greatest offenses in the history of the NFL, you see San Diego, Coryell, Rams, greatest show on turf, Patriots, Belichick. You know, you can throw some others out there. They were consistent, and they scored points. Bucks were inconsistent, didn't score points. And they always melted down in enemy territory. Penalties, turnovers, inaccurate pass, you name it. They always melted down. That's what Cutter's
not here. You don't judge a historic. They've been playing football for 100 years. 100 years, I believe, next year will be the 100th anniversary. 100 years. You don't judge a historic offense by moving the ball between the 20s. That's the ninth thing on the list. You got to score 30, 35 points a game. The Bucks didn't. Now, you did a little research.
Well, I don't understand Jason Light. I don't understand why he was going some of the directions he went in. Now, I know he's not a grand public speaker. He's not Mike Mayock, who we'll talk about later, taking over for Gruden.
He's a terrible public speaker, and he'll admit it.
He's not terrible. He's just the content of where he was going was nuts. It felt to me, Ira, that he was sort of echoing the sales pitch he gave to the Glazers to save his own ass. Of, hey, this is a historic offense, and we're not far away. But, you know, he doubled down with Casey Phillips on the website, and that's where he further said, you know, this is not only the one of the greatest offenses in NFL history. He said, you know, as in, quote, as in when football was invented, to really emphasize how great the offense is.
But Rutgers.
I looked. Of course, we all know that's stupid, right? There's three elements, Ira. They average 20.8 points a game in the second half of the season.
That's below league median.
Yeah, it's bad. I mean, it's below the average. But you look at the 2011 Lions,
right? No one's singing them as the greatest offense in history, okay? But you know what? Matthew Stafford cranked out more than 5,000 yards and 36 touchdowns. They ran for 4.3 yards a carry with three no-names running the ball, and they each one had like 350 yards.
Calvin Johnson.
Each
right.
one had like 350 yards each. They averaged more on the ground than the Bucs. Bucs were second to last in yards per carry this year, last in explosive runs more than 20. And those Lions put up 29 points a game. And you know what? Three more teams in the NFL that year were much better offensively than the Lions. The 2011 Packers, do we talk about them and Aaron Rodgers throwing 50 touchdowns? Jason Light's lost his mind on that front. And I just don't understand. I'm worried about the mentality of how they're going to build this thing because I think they think they're close.
Lee, what they had was, for half a season, an explosive passing game. That's what they had. A lot of long completions. Might have led the league in some of those categories. Yeah, 20-yard catches, 40-yard catches. They were right there at the top. They were also averaging about 28 points a game at that time. At that time. The offense cooled off considerably down the stretch. Now, you mentioned Mike Smith, and I'm not going to argue with that as a big problem area for Dirk Cutter in 2018. But I'm also going to throw out Jameis Winston and Dirk Cutter. Steve, I mentioned it in one of my two Cutter columns that went out very quickly after his dismissal. He was hired primarily to raise Winston's profile and make him an elite quarterback. Nobody's calling Winston an elite quarterback. Part of the problem is Jameis Winston got himself suspended on things he did, and then Cutter had nothing to do with. Lied to the team. Cutter had nothing to do with it. That's on Winston. But when he got on the field, he was erratic. The last game was good. The Bengal game was the worst game he's ever played as a Buck. That didn't look good on Cutter's resume. Had to bench him. I thought he benched him too long, maybe a week too long. You can argue that. The fact is, they really don't know what they got in Jameis Winston. They're going to give him one more shot because they really don't know.
They have an idea, but you're right.
After 4 years with Dirk Cutter, Steve, they don't know what they got with Jameis Winston. That is an indictment on Dirk Cutter.
Well, there's no question Dirk Cutter was hired because of Jameis. And Jameis didn't turn the corner. And like you pointed out, he got benched. When he got benched, Cutter was a dead man walking. Because basically he admitted, I failed. I raised the white flag. Jameis is on the bench for Ryan Fitzpatrick. And what's even more funny, everybody and their brother knew what Ryan Fitzpatrick was. Cutter marched him out anyway, and he turned out to be who everybody said he was. And then Cutter
Give him credit for the first 2 weeks.
Yeah,
he was great.
Of course. Yeah. But here Cutter was, I should say. He talks about Ryan Griffin like the guy's Dan Fouts. Why didn't you try him if you had Jameis benched?
Zage, I have an important question for you, and we're going to get into the coaching search and the hires and the potential names that are out there. I want to let everybody know it's a brand new year. Ed Morris Cadillac, Brandon, and Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa want to thank you for your tremendous support in 2018, and you've got to get to their websites. That's where it starts off. Still tremendous closeout and clearance opportunities. EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com. Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa is just west of 275 on Fletcher. And EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. They are on Causeway Boulevard in Brandon, so easy to get to. All sorts of new offers are popping on their website this week, as well as at JoeBucksFan.com. Ira, Todd Monken. What's the one thing Todd Monken is known for and you can count on him for?
Honesty.
Yeah, I was going to say honesty, yeah.
Honesty, exactly. So if I'm Team Glazer and Todd Monken, his contract is expiring, okay? And you know that guy's going to tell it to you as straight as it comes. How the hell do you not interview that guy, sit him down in front of Jason Light, and have the Glazers say, what went wrong? Here, 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 here. How would you fix it? How would you not want to tap into that guy's knowledge of the roster and this team?
I'm also interviewing him to know whether I'd consider him as a head coach or how much I want to keep him on the staff. Todd Monken's got a lot going for him, gentlemen. He called the plays this year, and I'll say it again. I shouldn't have to, but I'll say it again. That decision did not come from Mr. Dirk Cutter to give those play-calling duties to Monken. How many times has Cutter said publicly, and to us privately, I ain't giving up the play-calling. That's what I do, and I do it very well. So that might have been the first chink in the armor right then and there, Lee. And I think it came higher than Jason Light's pay grade. I'm saying that.
Brian Ford?
Anyway, Monken did a heck of a job. They did taper off at the end. You know, so Monken's got to take some responsibility for that. But for the most part, the play calling was good. I'd like to see some more screens. Honest as the day is long, I'd like a chance to keep him on the staff. And he's getting some play as a head coaching candidate around the league.
The Jets.
The Jets seem to be interested. Doesn't mean he's going to get the job.
No.
I'd be a little surprised if he does. But to Steve's point, now, you don't know for a fact that the Glazers didn't sit Monken down.
Of course not.
As part of decision-making whether to retain Cutter or not. If they did ask, now Monken's very loyal to Cutter.
Very.
But I do know that
he's also an honest guy.
I do know Light told everybody at the news conference that there would be no in-house candidates.
Yeah, he did. So Monken's not getting this job.
Nor Duffner.
If he gets the Jets job, which I don't think he will, but if he does, I don't think that's going to reflect very well on the Bucks. Who knows what Monken can do better than people at one Buck place?
That's true.
And if the Jets are impressed with him, I don't know. All I know is the only guy is Brenton Buckner that was sure is coming back off the staff. And that's not even a surety because new coach comes in, may not want Buckner.
That's right.
I don't care if he's on the contract. You're out.
Mm-hmm.
You're out. So I wish Monken the best. In my conversations with him, and I think you guys agree, his candidness is tremendous.
Yeah.
I still remember something he said at training camp, Lee. I think you were standing right there. We were in the bubble.
Yeah.
And he started talking about what a mess we were last year with their practice habits. Nobody talked about that.
No.
Except Monken. We were a mess. We would screw up in practice. And this is not a glowing, confirmation of the head coach. We would screw up in practice in 2017 training camp. And kind of the message was, we let it go. We weren't very demanding. We didn't have our requirements that high that they should be. And he talked about how the offense in last summer's training camp was at a much higher level, and that gave him confidence that they were going to play a lot better on offense. Sure enough, they did.
Yeah, I'm partial to Monken. He knows my old high school coach.
There you go.
Back in Illinois, his family, it's sort of like the Harbaughs of high school. Yeah, you know, his uncle's in the St. Louis area, Monken and his dad.
You're partial to anybody from the Midwest.
No, but I know these guys. I mean, I played against Munkin's uncle. Monken himself, like I said, he knows my high school coach. And so I'm partial to those guys. They're like the Harbaughs in high school. And, you know, really, they're that good. That's how I bonded with Monken. First off, like I said, we got a connection. But second off, you know, I was telling him how I played against his uncle. And he's like, oh, man, he used to have a big old defensive tackle. I went to Notre Dame, Marshall. I said, yeah, Mansell Carter. Yeah, that's right. And then he had this wide receiver. Yeah, Bobby Johnson played for the Giants. That's right.
DeKemper breaking bread with Todd Monken over here. Is this acceptable?
Of course it is, Zyra. Of course it is. I want to clarify that I wasn't lobbying for the Bucks to hire Monken. I don't think he'd be a good head coach hire here.
You mean as a sounding board.
You got to talk to the guy. He's there. I just don't understand it. I hope it does come out eventually that they did sit him down like that, but I don't think so. Ira, Jason Light had a lot to say.
Did he?
Well,
that might be a stretch, Isbitz. Hey, I don't know what tape you're looking at.
He had a lot to say, Ira. There's a lot of layers there. I still haven't gotten over the shock of it all. Otherwise, I'm going to write. When I do, I'll write more on JoeBucksFan.com.
But I asked him what are two priority on-field issues. Priority. Like last year, Cutter said after the season, explosives, third down defense or something like that. Anyway, what's the first thing what's the first thing Light said?
Third down
better
defense.
Running game. Isn't that the first thing he said to my question? I believe it was.
I think so. One thing he said, Ira, and look, it's obvious. I just ran through some of the running numbers. Not good. But one thing he said a couple of times, no ego. No ego is going to get in the way. What the hell does that mean? And why would we think that his ego would get in the way of hiring the best coach for the team? Why would he even think that? So that really was sort of odd. Who would say that? You know, can you imagine another GM walking up there and saying, well, I'm not going to let my ego get in the way.
We're going to cast a wide net.
What does that mean?
Yeah.
That was very strange.
Yeah, He was on the defensive.
For some reason, I didn't have an issue with that. Because we all know egos. One thing I've learned in the last 10 years covering the Bucks, and I've told people this outside of football, outside of this area, never underestimate the egos of people. I mean, Lovie Smith, that guy thought he was Vince Lombardi. Schiano thought he was Bill Walsh. I mean, egos on this guy. Our guys, I should say. The egos are just, and I think that's one thing I liked about Monken. He really didn't have much of an ego. I never thought Light had much of an ego. I mean, you get him on a side, yeah, I could do this, that, and the other thing, but he seems like a down-to-earth guy. So the egos on some of these people are just, you know, they're blinded by their ego.
Steve, maybe he had in mind the Arians rumors that followed quickly upon Cutter's dismissal And everybody knows the relationship between Arians and Light. And that's what Light might have had on his mind when he said ego and relationships are not going to be a factor.
Also, I don't know. I was just putting it out there saying I don't know what that means. It just seemed odd.
Another one, I think, you know, when he was referring to ego, that, you know, some coach comes in and is like, I want full control. And Light's going to say, okay, if you win, you can do whatever the hell you want. You know, I'll step aside.
That doesn't mean he's not going to make a speech to the Glazers to try to retain personnel control. He wants personnel control.
They all do. But I think Light wants a job more than anything else.
Well, he's got one right now.
Tentatively, yeah.
He's got one.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, going on that route, I thought Light was a little bit all over the place. He was telling Casey Phillips that, you know, number one priority, they'll do everything they can to re-sign Adam Humphries. Well, you haven't talked to your new coach yet.
That's your number one off-season priority?
I'm just saying it was odd because why would you say that until you sit down with the coach and say, hey, what do you envision with the offense and where do you see Humphries fitting in? It's strange.
Well, the very first thing I thought of when he said that, I'm shocked that it wasn't the first thing you thought of. Very first thing I thought of, Adam Humphries' agent is smiling ear to ear.
Yeah, unless
if that's your main priority, he's like, whatever it takes or something like that, whatever we have to do. If I'm Humphries' agent, man, I'm getting ready to buy a boat, a yacht out in Biscayne Bay.
He's a nice player, Steve. He's a nice player. And we know what he would do in New England, catch about 95 balls and be the second coming of Wes Welker. He's a nice player. But let's not forget, he also is a very nice reflection on Jason Light as a general manager. Wants to keep him around. And keep parading him in front of the Glazers as a success story. One of he's not the only one. You know, well, you got Nassib out there, and there's other ones.
Don't get me going on Nassib, because this team thought he was a jag when he came out in the draft. So don't get me going about Nassib.
Well,
they were so damn desperate.
Picked him up when other teams could have. They picked him up.
You know how the waiver wire is. If you got a garbage record, you got one of the top picks, so to speak. And they were desperate beyond desperate for a pass rush. So,
well, if they didn't like him out of the draft, they changed their mind, and they were flexible enough to give him a chance.
Yeah, I hear you, Ira. And he mentioned Nassib as a shining light going into next year. But in that conversation about the defensive line as a strength, Light mentioned JPP, he mentioned Vita Vea, he mentioned Nassib, and he did not mention Gerald McCoy. He was asked about Gerald McCoy, Ira, as far as his future, and Light didn't say, yes, I see Gerald as part of this team. He said, oh, we have tough decisions to make. Would not endorse Gerald McCoy, wouldn't even sort of dance around an endorsement by saying, look, Gerald's an excellent football player. I'd want to keep all our good football players.
He didn't have any problem saying Winston was coming back in 2019.
Exactly. So he didn't say even anything like, hey, Gerald's a good player, and we'll sit down with the new head coach and figure it out. He didn't want to go there. So what do you think of that, Ira? You think that?
I think it is significant. I don't think you guys have overplayed it on the website. It's important. Sometimes what you don't say, Lee, as much as what you do say.
Oh, yeah.
We talked on this podcast for a month or two. McCoy might have played his last game.
Yeah.
It makes some sense financially. His best days are behind him. He had an okay season. Nothing great. He's had better years. I thought with JPP, to take a little pressure off him and to take a little double teaming off him, I thought he was going to have a breakthrough season, maybe the best of his career. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. He was okay.
Well, funny you bring that up. Not only did it not happen, but you had JPP with a hell of a year.
Hell of a year.
You just talked about Nassib, came out of nowhere.
And Vea came on strong at the end.
And still McCoy was like, okay.
Yeah, McCoy was okay. You know, look, the Bucs are not going to think about it this way, and they shouldn't. But for the sake of Gerald McCoy, and he's been a loyal soldier, I wouldn't mind seeing him on another team that had a better playoff chance than the Bucs.
The Patriots.
You know, I wouldn't mind it.
I thought you were going to get Isbitz worked up, so we're talking about Ring of Fame.
And, of course, there's plenty of Buck fans out there that would hold the door open for Gerald.
Oh, my gosh. It'd be like New Year's Eve all over again for these people.
Hey, look, we're not going to do the Ring of Honor again because Ira said he's the slam dunk, so it's the Sage's podcast.
He's a slam dunk. You know.
Well, he gets irritated by that.
I got it. Slam dunk. That's it.
You got him waiting in line behind Caleb Benenock over there. Take it easy.
No, I don't. Ira, cut that out.
Speaking of Benenock, there's no way he's going to be the right guard for this football team.
No.
The irony, I think, with McCoy is going to be, suppose the new coach comes in and all of a sudden he's like, oh, well, why would I want to get rid of McCoy? He's a good player. Jason, I'm not getting rid of any good players in the trenches.
I got a little scoopage.
Oh.
A little bit. Talking to somebody at One Buck Place, in the words of Lee DeKemper, a deep source who will remain unidentified, and I asked specifically about Alex Kappa. Alex Kappa. First thing I said was, he can't play ahead of Caleb Benenuk. Second thing I said was, isn't he a tackle ahead of a guard? The answers were, he wasn't ready. And two, he's not a tackle. He's not a tackle. Do you have to be a great athlete to play right tackle?
You got
to
have
you
better
can't
feet.
Put him in there? I don't know a lot of 6'6", 6'7" guards. I'm sorry. I don't. So, to me, I don't want to close the door on Ronald Jones, and I don't want to close the door on Kappa. But if I was a betting man, these are not going to be guys that Jason Light's going to look back fondly on in about 4 years. It's just not.
Well, how do they even know he's not a tackle? They admitted that they were working him at guard all year.
Must have tried him a little bit in training camp or
they said they didn't.
Try him in practice when we're not around.
My guess is they know what kind of feet he has. And
it was a blunt answer. He's not a tackle.
Yeah.
He's not a tackle.
All right, Sage. All right, Sage. We got a lot to hit on here. Now, this coaching search situation, you know, Jason Light explained that he sort of made it sound like it was his call to go to the consulting firm and get their advice and help. But he also made it clear that he'd be the one in charge. And, you know, that's not what they're doing as far as having another outsider group pick the head coach. Sage, is there any shred of you? Because a lot of fans are on Twitter saying, well, Jason Light's finally going to get a chance to pick his own head coach. Do you believe for a second that he's the one making the final call on head coach?
No, and I also don't believe that the head coaching search started on Monday. I really don't, and I don't think the Kempfer does either. Look, this reminds me very much in some ways of the Lovey Smith, for example, Lee.
Yeah.
A couple of minority coaches coming in. You know, I don't want to call it a cursory interview.
It's
not
demeaning.
That's not fair to those guys.
Yeah.
But they're not going to get the job. They're not going to get the job.
I can't say that.
You got to fulfill some requirements, mm-hmm. and the Bucks will do so. I think they know who they want. I think they. I'm not sure this consulting firm isn't a ruse either. I think this thing's going to get wrapped up rather quickly because I think they've known for a while that Cutter wasn't coming back. This ain't a decision made, after the Atlanta Falcons game. Let's not go with Dirk Cutter in 2019. Nonsense. I would say at least a month in the making. Why do I say it? Cutter's body language, easy to read for about a month. He knew it. His family knew it.
Yeah.
Your sources knew it. His bits, too. He said something about 3-4 weeks ago that they didn't think they were coming back. You know, once in a while, Isbitz gets something right. Once in a while. But I think this thing's going to be done quickly. The one name we haven't heard very much, what happened to Jim Harbaugh? I thought Jim Harbaugh was linked to the Bucks.
He was.
Now you're hearing about another college coach being linked to the Bucks, and Mr. Kelly.
Well, with the Glazers, when there's silence, that means something's going on. So who knows?
I don't think Kelly checks enough boxes. Isbitz, you can weigh in on this over here. Lee and I went at it a little bit before the podcast. What's Brian Kelly going to tell the Glazers about his work going forward with Jameis Winston? I don't think he's got a lot to say in that regard. And to me, that's what it's all about, getting Jameis Winston to the next level.
Well, he knows Jameis.
He doesn't know Jameis like Bruce Arians knows Jameis.
I don't know.
What's his relationship with Winston?
Well, he had to build a defense to try to stop him. It didn't work. Well, but they played Florida State when Jameis was a sophomore.
That ain't enough, Lee.
But, you know, Kelly, I know you were dismissing Kelly.
Kelly have a history of developing quarterbacks on the college level?
Okay. Not NFL record, but to Kelly, everywhere Kelly has been, he's turned around garbage programs. I mean, Notre Dame was horrible before he got there. You know. Ty Winningham and that kind of slop. He turned around, you know, Notre Dame with him wound up in a national championship game, wound up in a playoffs. Now,
that last game was no shining beacon over there.
I understand. But you know what? They got there. Something a lot of schools, Georgia didn't make it. Texas didn't make it. I can go on. Washington didn't make it. Ohio State didn't make it.
There you go.
I'm not saying Kelly should be hired. And just for the record, it was David Haugh. I hope I pronounced his name right. H-A-U-G-H. He, longtime columnist and reporter for the Chicago Tribune, not like the Tampa Bay News or whatever that weekly chain of weekly papers is in Pinellas County. This guy's been with the Tribune for a long time. He clearly has a mole in that search firm.
Well, he might have a relationship with Kelly's agent, too.
He may have a relationship with Kelly, period.
Not a bad thing to get Kelly's name out there. Not a bad thing.
Well, he said he claims the search firm's pushing Kelly. And in his report, he also said the Glazers are willing to cough up $10 million a year for a coach. Now, a lot of people are like, well, I knew that because that's the only way they're going to get Chucky. You know that
you
how.
Got, you got to give Brian Kelly $10 million to wangle him out of South Bend?
Well, you know what? He's making 2.5, so if you quadruple the guy's salary, I'm not as anti-Kelly as you are.
I'll give him 2.75. He'll be jumping through hoops to come.
He's a big name. He can develop offensive linemen. He's always got good offensive lines. He's a big believer in the line of scrimmage, owner of the line of scrimmage, defensively as well. You know, Notre Dame, of course, they can't recruit like Oklahoma. They can't recruit like Florida. You name it, Miami.
Well, you know what? So I'm hiring Brian Kelly when he brings freaking Quentin Nelson and Zach Martin with him. Then I want him.
So I'm not saying they should hire Brian Kelly, but I'm higher on Brian Kelly than you are. You're acting like the guy is Willie Taggart.
Now, of course, when they hire him, I'll buddy up to him like he's the best thing since sliced bread over there. You know how I operate over there. I have no pride.
The guy, David Howe, was reporting, once again, he didn't say anything that the Bucks had interviews set up. He said that the search firm was pushing Brian Kelly on the Bucks. Now, someone else locally, you know, got indignant and like, well, I just checked with someone with the Bucks and they said they have no plans to interview him. Well, didn't the Bucks also say they weren't going to talk about it publicly?
I don't know. This is a veteran team. As much as Light tries to say their average age is whatever, they got some veterans on this team, especially if McCoy sticks around and the Dotson sticks around. And this ain't the 2009 Bucks with the veteran purge and going with all youth. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if a college coach is the right way to go.
I'm not advocating him. I'm just saying I think he's a better candidate than what his qualifications are better than what you're giving him. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know if this team is what you think it is, Ira. I don't know. Philosophically, back-to-back 5-11s, a lot of the veterans might be mentally weak. It's not exactly a Pro Bowl-laden roster here.
Who's that on?
That's on the GM. You know, and, of course, he's the only one left. So, still, I really don't know. I think I don't have a problem with going young and going if they have a right plan with a guy.
What about my Winston angle?
Rebuild.
You think Winston's a big factor in hiring the next coach?
Well, just because you have young players, does that mean Jameis can't play well?
No. I'm talking about a coach that has a history of working with quarterbacks.
You gotta know, I hear you, but you gotta have a guy with a plan. I'm just the plan guy. You know, I don't care if it's a defensive coach. Who's running the offense? Who's the whole ship?
I gotta get going on this. Steve is setting me up like T-ball league.
Oh, the meathead rant. You went the route of the meathead rant.
Will someone point out one freaking coach that interviews in the NFL? Like, what's your plan? I'm just going to wing it.
You just hit a home run in T-ball over
come
there.
Come on. I mean, I hear this all the time. I hear guys on sports radio, you got to have a plan. Do you really freaking think a guy would be in an interview and not have a clue what he's going to do? Come freaking on, man.
There you go. Now,
that drives me nuts.
Seriously, some of them.
Way to go, DeKeffer.
Oh, no, of course they all have a plan. But
way to put Steven in place.
You may not like it.
I'm trying to put Steven in
place. Yeah, no, you may not like the plan.
It's the sports radio clowns that say that.
You may not like the plan. You know, I'd have to hear who a guy is, even an offensive coach. Who are you hiring in here to help run things?
Do we think Kelly could put a very good staff together, a pro staff?
Well, you know what? His ex-offensive line coach went to the Bears. So maybe they could somehow finagle some deal to get him over to the Bucks. And that gives you an idea. He actually has a clue about, you know, the Bears and Bears. They're a playoff team. They got Notre Dame's offensive line coach who coached up Nelson, your buddy.
All I know is that Arians went out of his way to text somebody and said, I'm interested in the Bucks job.
By the way, since we're talking about texting, is Mike McCarthy's agent working overtime?
Yes.
He's got that guy.
He's going to get a job.
What, Dairy Queen? I don't know.
Which one's he going to get?
Well, Ira, look, you were talking about the minority candidates before. Eric Bieniemy. I know Lee and I think he's a legitimate candidate. And
Edwards is another one.
From Minnesota, but they're supposedly going to be interviewing Bieniemy today, right? You know, again, what is this guy coming to the table with? Who knows? I don't know.
You're right. Guys surprise you. Guys surprise
you. Tomlin, perfect example.
Guys surprise you.
Yeah, there have been so many guys through the years. It's just like Todd Monken. I'd love to know what he puts on the table to the Jets and says, This is my offensive coordinator. These are my coaches. Mm-hmm. This is my defense. We don't know what he's coming to the table with. My guess is Munkin's even going to be showing up in New York for his interview with a whole host of college coaches that he thinks are top shelf and why. I'm a little concerned. I'm in that camp of fans that are concerned that Jason Light's going to, that he's not just so into just getting Arians here at all costs, that he's going to really be open-minded to all these guys.
And, you know, to be honest, Arians has issues. Arians has issues. He's got serious health issues. His age. He's not going to be a 10-year guy in Tampa. So there's some things to overcome. Now, boy, do you see the way the Cardinals fell apart? After he left. I didn't think he had a lot of talent to work with. He had Chandler Jones. He lost his quarterback. They won 8 games last year, I believe, with junk. All he had Larry Fitzgerald.
Aging.
And he's got Peterson. He had Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
And David Johnson didn't play last year. They won 8 games, mm-hmm. Lee. This year.
Who was that with?
You know, I just did the final AAP power rankings. They're 32nd.
Who did
that? They're the worst team in football.
Yeah, Wilkes was one and done. The Arians thing, Ira, let's talk about Jameis a little bit. He had the benefit this year of being in year 4 of a system. The only system he knew, with receivers he trusted and a perfect setup.
That's an asset.
His offensive line healthy all year long. So when you leave that situation, in theory, aren't you going to take a step back because you've lost your coaches, you've lost your offensive system, you're in a whole new learning curve, and if one is to believe Jason Light, you had amazing coaching, and you were part of one of the best offenses in the history of the NFL. Isn't that prime Jameis for a step back overall?
I see your point, but I want to look at the flip side, Lee. Number one, a guy could bring in a better running game. That would certainly help Winston's play action.
A running game.
replace a couple of starters on this durable offensive line.
Yeah.
And durable doesn't mean productive. Durable.
No, but I agree with Steve. Rarely does the NFL have a healthy offensive line all year long. Last time that happened, remember, and Cutter was one of them, crowed about Atlanta when they went to the Super Bowl. Well, the reason why they went to the Super Bowl, because their offensive line was healthy. Well, how about yours?
Now, lastly, I'll throw this one out at you. A new guy and a new system might say, well, Winston's forte is not throwing the deep ball. Fitzpatrick throws a better deep ball than Jameis Winston. Just ask Mr. Jackson on that one. Meanwhile, Winston's throwing 40-yard balls and not completing them. A new coach could come in with a new system, less explosive plays, but less turnovers. Try to take more and roll Winston out a little bit.
Thank you.
We didn't see a lot of that, Lee.
So but when we did, the guy
I
was
understand
electric.
Steve's point about continuity, but you never know. With a new guy coming in, looking at Winston's strengths and weaknesses, and what did Cutter always say? Camouflage your weaknesses and play to your strengths. And I'm not sure the Bucs did that with Winston.
I agree. You know what? The few times Jameis
did... I just won you over with that argument.
Yeah, well, the few times Jameis did get out of the pocket, he was electric. I mean, Dallas, that pass to his left, whoo.
He moves well, and he keeps his eyes downfield. Mm-hmm. He's good at it.
I'm just saying, Ira, with the evaluation of Winston, we started earlier saying he's got a lot to prove, or the organization still needs to see more. It's a tough spot when you put a guy in a prove-it year in a brand-new offense.
Yeah.
It's a tough spot for any quarterback. It's not just Jameis.
This, I think, in the Glazer mind, Lee, which is a dangerous place to be, in the Glazer mind, you're saying to yourself, we're giving Winston one more chance in a different environment, and if he's still middle of the road, we move on. And I don't think any Buck fan could argue with that, except the ones that want to get rid of Winston right now.
Oh,
and there's plenty of them.
Yeah.
There's plenty of them.
But the head coach might argue with that. That's the problem, Ira. There you encapsulated it beautifully. The head coach might say, look, my guy's making a little some strides here. It's my first year. Of course he's middle of the road. It's my first year. And we're growing here. I need you to pay this guy the going rate, $30 million, and lock him up so we can build
something. I don't think that works, Steve. He'll have 5 years in the bank. He's not a kid anymore.
Not for the new head coach.
He'll have 5 NFL years behind him.
Steve's on to something. And you know what?
I'm not giving him any credit. What are you talking about?
You know what he'll steal the deal? He gets minimum 9 wins, and he says Jameis is turning the corner. New check.
I look at it differently. I say a guy goes 6-10 and blames Winston – and says, I want my own quarterback.
That could happen too. That could happen too.
It could happen too, Ira. That's what that's.
But I agree with Steve. If Jameis wins minimum 9 games, and the coach, whoever that may be, is begging the Glazers, look, man, he's just turning the corner. I need him, because he could see what would happen with the Cody Kesslers of the world. Steve's absolutely right.
If he wins 9 games, I got no problem with his point about staying with Winston and staying with the head coach.
Ira,
Win some games.
Is this team that close? Well, I hope so.
Carolina's slipping. Atlanta's vulnerable. Atlanta's bringing in new coordinators. Who knows what's going to happen here?
That's what makes the Sears 5-11 even worse.
They were vulnerable.
Your 2-0 start. Division's not as good as it was in the past.
You couldn't take advantage.
Boy, is that frustrating.
But yes. It's hard to keep selling the Bucs as they might get there because other teams are X, Y, and Z. They got to get there because they're good, and it's going to take some time. They've been talking on SiriusXM NFL Radio, Ira, all week that, you know what, the danger that you run into is that Jameis gets you to 7-9 next year, and you have no draft pick capital to go get a quarterback that you might want.
That's why I'm drafting one in the third round.
You gotta take one this year at some point.
You gotta take one.
I mean, just to cover your back. I would think the new coach would at least want that. But
take
who
one
knows?
And let him develop.
Who knows? That'll be
you don't have to play him.
That'll be a great question for Jason Light coming up the next time he's available. That's one I'm going to be asking him, because Dirk Cutter made it very clear. Very clear over the last few years. He said it multiple times. I didn't spend any time looking at quarterback film when he was asked about rookie quarterbacks. Oh, we didn't scout quarterbacks. Well, Jason Light, this year, are you scouting quarterbacks? Do you expect to draft a quarterback? Because Dirk Cutter said you guys didn't scout him the last few years. It'll be interesting to see.
Is that what Cutter said?
Absolutely. He said it multiple times. Yeah, when they were playing the Browns, he said, I didn't look at any quarterback.
I was told by somebody that Light was actually interviewing Jared Goff.
It's not going to be Ryan Griffin, with the hope of if Winston falters, we got our guy in Ryan Griffin. That's not going to happen.
Dan Fouts, right?
All
right,
I got a fun one for you from about your colleague Rick Stroud, who is a bit of a loose cannon. And Stroud, he was on SiriusXM the other day. I didn't write this up yet, but I'm going to.
What do you mean he was on Sirius? I'm on Sirius.
He was on as a guest, morning show.
NFL Radio.
NFL Radio.
You're on with Russo.
That's unacceptable. Anyway, continue. Continue.
So Stroud's on with Bob Papa and Charlie Weiss in the morning, and they're talking Bucks, and Stroud starts talking about Jameis. And Stroud says, starts talking about how well Jameis pushes the ball on the 20-yard throw, but he has trouble with the deep ball. And in what was a rarity in sports radio, Charlie Weiss, as Rick Stroud is talking, says, quote, I call BS on that. Cuts him off.
What a moment in radio.
I call BS on that. He totally cuts him off. And he says, look, he doesn't have a problem hitting Mike Evans. And if you could throw the deep ball to one guy, you could throw the deep ball to other guys. I call BS on that. And he goes on and says that makes no sense whatsoever, because Stroud had referenced DeSean Jackson. So a very interesting take from a guy who understands the game and who's watched Jameis.
Well, we've watched every throw Winston's made.
Sure.
And Weiss hasn't.
Right, but he was saying philosophically.
Well, philosophically, I think Stroud's on safer ground, quite frankly, which pains me to say to a certain degree. You know, Fitzpatrick throws a better deep ball than Jameis. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. Jameis does a lot of good things, but, you know, as far as the Mike Evans stuff, Evans is averaging 17.7 yards of completion, which is very high, very high. But Mike Evans ain't catching 45-yard balls. He's catching 20-yard balls. That's the difference. He only had 5 touchdowns. Evans, before the final 2 games of the season. He finished strong, finished with 3 in the last 2 games.
Imagine that. Jameis wasn't forcing to malcontent anymore.
Look, among Winston's top qualities, you wouldn't put the deep ball in the top 3. Stop listening to Bob Papa.
Hey,
and start listening to me with the mad dog.
Can't throw the deep ball is a lot different than...
Oh, I didn't say can't throw.
Well, that was the implication, but interesting to think about nonetheless. Now, here we are. Bucks fans are wondering timetables. You said you think this is going to be wrapped up quickly, that they probably have their guy, that of course there's plenty going on behind the scenes. We're going to be covering it on joebucksfan.com. Your columns are going to be covering it, and there's some Hall of Fame announcements coming up.
And I threw out my AP All Pro team today, Mr. DeKemper, and there is a Buck on the team.
Okay.
No, Golston didn't make it. Golston didn't make it. Tough call. But I put Evans on.
I was going to say.
They had two wide receivers, and they had a flex position. You could put a receiver or a running back or something. I put Evans and Michael Thomas from the Saints as my receivers. I mean, it's a loaded field. Loaded.
I'm sure you struggled not to put Charles Sims on.
And DeAndre Hopkins is a tremendous player. I just read something today. I don't know if it's true. He didn't drop a ball this season.
I heard that.
He caught 115.
That's ridiculous.
Didn't drop a ball. It's ridiculous. And Deshaun Watson is not an elite quarterback at this stage.
Dangerous. He's very dangerous.
I don't know that he throws a better ball than Winston. I don't know that.
Yeah, he does.
Well, last year, Hopkins got hurt and missed a whole bunch of time in the second half of the year. And Hopkins' production never wavered. He had bumps throwing him the ball. The guy's a tremendous player. So anyway, I went with Hopkins, Evans, and Michael Thomas. Well, that leaves out Julio Jones, Schuster, Antonio Brown. Thielen had a hell of a year. Devontae Adams. I mean, a lot of good guys had good years, but it was tough. Anyway, we put it out on Wednesday, and my awards have been announced. These are just mine. There's not the AP awards.
What, Riesling Award?
Just who I voted for. Now, you're not going to get the official announcement until that Saturday night before the Super Bowl when they do that special program.
What was the Dante Award for the Dog of the Year?
I didn't have a Dante Award. See, now you're making me cry because you just brought up my beloved Boston. Everybody's asking me, when you're going to get another dog?
You will, right?
Well, my car was just total. I got things on my mind over here. and the calzone.
The calzone.
I was going to say, just got the calzone.
Anyway, I'm not going to go through my awards, but I am going to say, as a Chiefs fan who is very nervous about the start
you
of the playoffs.
Be.
Because they're playing a freaking home game and got a bye week, and everybody else wants that, and I'm not sure it's good for Andy Reid, but Mahomes is my MVP. As much as I love Breeze, and I called him a top 10 all-time quarterback, and Russo killed me. And now, 6 weeks later, I think Russo probably agrees with me because Breeze might have just had the best year he ever had, which is saying something.
Wow.
He was fantastic. They're the number one seed in the NFC. I believe they're the odds-on favorite. Steve, correct me. To win the Super Bowl, the Saints.
Win.
They are the favorites.
Wow.
But Mahomes was spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
50 touchdowns. The runner-up had 39. Who was the runner-up? Touchdown passes. 39.
Let me think.
39.
Dun, dun, dun.
No, Mahomes had 50.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, no, okay, go ahead.
The runner-up had 39. You read them out my column, but you're not allowed to vote on it.
Philip Rivers.
No. Andrew Luck.
Really?
39. Anyway. I'm going with Mahomes, and that's not a homer pick, and Evans is not a homer pick. He deserves it. Big year from Evans. 8 100-yard games, mix and match under center. You don't know who's playing, Fitzpatrick or Winston. Evans got the job done.
Well, I'm going to ask you this. You just brought up Andrew Luck. The job Chris Ballard did.
Fabulous.
Beyond fabulous.
Fabulous.
Because he wasn't going to pick the guy from the Eagles. Can't think of his name. Ex-Packers quarterback. Frank Reich, Buffalo, I'm sorry. Ex-Buffalo quarterback. That wasn't his first choice. He got stiffed at the altar. The Glazers see this, and it's like, what the hell? We got a quarterback. We got this. We got that. But the Colts stunk last year. All of a sudden, boom, they turned around like that.
Marlon Mack, their main running back.
By the way, the Bucs scouted like I scout Rachel Watson.
Hey, they drafted two All-Pros.
Yes, they did.
And you do that.
Yes, they did.
You're gonna get there. If the Bucs drafted two All-Pros... All pros, they probably would have won three more games.
And Luck's a notch below an all pro. Right there.
And you add an all pro who you didn't have the year before. It comes down to adding three players and a new coach. But, yeah, you can be that
difference
close.
Difference maker players.
By the way, when people talk about continuity, so the Colts should have kept Pagano and that clown of a GM they had. And I'm imagining the Glazers looking like, what the hell?
Now, Pagano's not that badly. He's
not
terrible.
I didn't say he's terrible, but that clown they had at GM, ex-offensive lineman, Wilcox, or Will, start with the W.
The right GM makes a huge difference, Steve.
Our final point, Sage, Le'Veon Bell is going to be out there. Bucks have a garbage running game. They have what Jason Light thinks is the greatest offense in history that just needs a running game. So, are you going to bring this guy in or what if you're Jason Light? Would the Glazers approve it? And you know if Bruce Arians comes in here as an older guy who believes in himself, he's going to want Le'Veon Bell in a heartbeat. What do you think the Bucks will approach that? What sort of mindset?
Tough call. You could argue he's the best back in football, with all due respect to Ezekiel Elliott and Kamara and now Saquon Barkley. Lee, the guy's a singular talent, Le'Veon Bell. But you know what? I don't want him. I want another offensive lineman or two. I want a running back that I can get in the second or fourth round because they're falling off trees, according to my esteemed former colleague Martin Fenley. And he's not wrong. C.J. Anderson just had a couple of big games. They plucked him off. The guy was out of football.
Meanwhile, the Bucks are out on the beach.
Le'Veon Bell, I think he's trouble. Lee? Antonio Brown is trouble. I don't know what's going on in Pittsburgh. But for a stable organization like that, they're a disaster.
Well, Tomlin's lost control of that team.
They're a disaster.
Tomlin's lost control.
These are big personalities. They want to get paid. Now, Steve, you ain't getting Le'Veon Bell for $7 million a year. This is a big man right here. You got some other guys that are going to want to be paid down the line, including Winston, past your $21 million. You got to plan for that. You can't bank on Winston failing in 2019. You got to think he's going to succeed. Then you got to take care of the man. So I'm passing on Bell. I'm passing.